Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Julie Douglas.
And we are still in the thick of the Atlanta summer. The heat is awful. The air, just you feel it like just thick against your skin. It's like wading through pudding. And it just numbs your brain. You forget who you are. And all around us, there's this cacophony. You hear it?
Chorus.
Yeah, just this chorus of just insane insect noises. Mm-hmm. And you can almost feel it on your skin. Like the sound we're hearing right now in the background, it can't possibly do it justice because you almost feel it. And it has this kind of rise and fall. This crescendo rises up all around you, and then it kind of murmurs back down again. And it's just it's amazing. It's
amazing, and it's also a signal that your summer overlords have arrived, right? And it's not just us here in Georgia. This is all over the world. So for all you listeners, you probably know what we're talking about, or most of you, because you know they're everywhere. It's the greatest insect infestation in the world. Cicadas.
You mean like the best insect?
Greatest, biggest.
Okay.
Craziest.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. It's just amazing to behold these guys. Cicadas or cicadas, if you rather.
Yeah. You'll hear me go between both because it's a weird little language thing for me. But yeah, cicadas right now.
Yep.
They're obviously, they've been on our mind because, as you said, they sort of usher in the hottest point of summer, at least here in Georgia, and you become very aware of this sound permeating the air all around you.
Yeah, currently we're dealing with what is called Brood 13, because there are different broods of cicadas. And though there are numerous species, for starters, there are like 3,000 or more different species. I suppose we should describe what they look like, just in case people are not really familiar.
They are kind of monstrous looking or beautiful looking, depending on your opinion.
Well, I think both are apt. Yeah, they when humans start really seeing them, they're emerging as this little nymph, this little ground-based creature that looks kind of like, if you've ever seen the Miyazaki film Nausicaä, Valley of the Wind, those big giant insects that are in that with the glowing red eyes, they kind of look like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of they're really kind of awesome like that, because suddenly they're everywhere, crawling up the sides of trees.
And they're milky white. So just imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they really look alien. Like there is, I mean, most insects do have kind of an alien look to them, but these guys really look awesome. And they crawl up to a certain height and then they begin to molt.
Right. Right? And so they begin their life underground. So that's why they've got that kind of milky white body. And like you said, they make their way to the trees and then they begin to molt. And lo and behold, these beautiful wings just unfurl.
Yeah. And they inflate them. And once they're ready to go, they take off. They don't always get to take off. Sometimes there are some flaws in the emergence ritual, if you will. Mm-hmm. Especially like if there's like pesticide in the area, that'll mess with it. And they just end up being half emerged and something comes and eats them. But yeah, once they have those wings, then they're able to fly around, make just fabulous noises, and they make different noises. The males are making mating noises, but then they all will make noise if they're approached by a predator.
Right, right. So, and that's something we'll get to in a little bit, but that's important about the certain sort of calls that they make, because they're actually pretty specific. I know it sounds, when you're hearing them, it just sounds like one big chorus, but there's actually very distinct noises emanating from that chorus.
Yeah. And these guys don't sting. They don't bite.
No. And they're not going to hurt you. Yeah. They're not going to ruin anything in your yard. If anything, you'll get some nicks in the tree branches from the females when they're laying their eggs. But they're not going to hurt you. The only thing I did see, though, is Sir Richard Attenborough had a little clip that I saw, and he was hanging out with a cicada, and he was making, he was, of course, and he was trying to woo it, and he was making little clicks of the finger like that, and it was coming toward him. It hopped down on him and began to think it needed to mate with him.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you were to do that, you should be prepared for some sort of mating ritual to happen on your arm, and perhaps even like the little proboscis to start pecking away at your arm.
Wow, man, Attenborough is the best, really. I mean,
yeah.
I loved it in the episode of Life of Mammals where he had some hedgehogs come and do it in his backyard. But now he's actively wooing cicadas in, I assume this is Life of Insects.
I can't remember where the clip was from, probably, but I mean, he just sexes up everything. It's that voice. It's that approach. It's the wooing.
Oh, man. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
All right.
But we should probably talk about these guys, where we can find them, in the United States, mostly in the southeastern United States, in Australia, all over. In fact, there are 200 species alone in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Those guys always get some good critters.
Yeah. And again, we talked a little bit about what they look like, but again, you've got green bodied ones, black bodied ones, brown, and so on and so forth, and various sizes too.
The really amazing form of cicadas are, of course, the periodical cicadas. And we're about to discuss those in a little more detail. You only find those in eastern North America.
Yeah.
So sorry, Australia, but we've got the goods on the really awesome bugs this time.
Yeah, and the periodical, we should talk about that a little bit, the difference between a periodical cicada and an annual cicada.
Yes. Annuals, of course, come out every year, members of the different brood of that particular species will come out every year. So it's like, oh, well, these guys from this particular species, I see those guys all the time. But then there are other cicadas, these periodicals, and they will stay underground for tremendous periods of time, especially when you think of insects, because so many insects live such short lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, the insect world is so hostile and short-lived. It's just staggering that you have cicadas, periodical cicadas, with 13-year life cycles, 17-year life cycles. There are seven species of periodical cicadas, and there are four with 13-year life cycles and three with 17-year life cycles.
And we are in the 13-year, so these guys would have hung out in Georgia at least May through June.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just really amazing to think it's this presence that just vanishes for a decade or more.
Yeah.
You know,
17 years underground, 13 years underground. And then the annuals are what we're hearing right now because it's July.
Yeah.
July and August. Excuse me, it's August now. And that's what we're hearing up in the trees. So that's kind of cool. And we really want to talk a little bit more about those 17 years, 13 years, 1 or 2 years underground, depending on the species.
Yeah, it's really interesting because they come, it's like this brief, not even the whole summer, you know, just a very brief, high time of mating in the trees and making lots of noise and giving cats and dogs things to play with. But But yeah, there's a whole prequel to the cicada life we see underground, and it lasts 13 or 17 years for the periodicals. Generally, it's a lot of root drinking, so it's not exactly it's not nearly as exciting as the tree mating
and
goes. But you know,
gotta
start somewhere.
Yeah, these little guys, they hatch up on the trees, right? out of their egg, and then they make their way down and they burrow underneath the ground, and they survive underground by sucking xylem, which is sap from tree roots, as you mentioned, and it's through the proboscis, which is like a feeding tube. And again, you mentioned too, these are called nymphs.
Yes.
And oddly enough, like year after year, they live underground, and somehow, and they still don't know why this is or how this is, they detect that this is the year that they need to emerge, and that it's the temperature has risen to a degree that it should, that would be good for them to go ahead and emerge from the earth. And that's when, as you mentioned before, they just kind of, you know, start making their way, slumbering toward the top of the tree where they then molt. And this is really cool too. After they mate, and we'll talk a little bit more about mating too, in their mating rituals, the females lay their eggs and they use something called an ovipositor, which just sounds like it should have a trademark.
Oh, yeah, the ovipositor. Yeah, it's in species like wasps and bees, it is, of course, the stinger.
Right.
But in these guys, it has only one purpose, and that's to lay some eggs.
Mm-hmm.
The original purpose.
Yeah, it's kind of like a samurai sword, just making these deep cuts into the branches. And then they deposit about between 400 and 600 eggs. And that's like the main crux of this whole thing.
Yeah.
17 years underground just to emerge, mate, and then, you know, lay your eggs and die away. It's
well,
amazing.
That's a genetic mission, you know, to mate. Put out these young in the tree and make sure that that the brood can continue, you know?
Yeah. And you had brought up an interesting question the other day when we were just kind of talking about this over the water cooler, but you know, if they could talk to us, you know, what might they consider themselves? Like they've lived 17 years underground in this one form, and then they become changelings and they unfurl those wings, and those are the adults. And that's what we recognize them.
Yeah. We recognize the adults as a cicada.
Yeah.
Because, well, for one thing, that's what we see. It is the adult form. It's the form that actually mates and reproduces. But for the vast majority of their lifespan, they are nymphs. So, I mean, in a way, it's like, which is the species? Which is the form, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, just one of those interesting questions. Like if they were looking at all the literature online and they were like, hey, that's not me, really. That's me for 2 weeks and then I die.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if somebody was like, I can't believe everyone's posted all these pictures of me on spring break. That's just me on spring break. The rest of the time, I'm a contract lawyer. But I don't see any pictures of me in, you know,
in a tie
going through contracts with red ink. No, instead you focus on me in Miami Beach.
Yeah, in a banana hammock. Which that's fine if you want to wear a banana hammock. That's fine. But anyway, yes, that is their mission, And which brings us again to the whole mating process and the reason why that call, that siren-like call, at least to the other female cicadas, is so strong and so loud, sometimes up to 110 decibels. And just to give everybody an idea of what that sounds like, your lawnmower is 90 decibels. A car horn is 110 decibels. Now think of like thousands of these guys and gals, actually not the gals because they don't sing, all in chorus. It can be deafening, as I'm sure some people know.
Yeah, but I think in a really positive way. Like, my family used to live out in the middle of nowhere in western Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the forest would just buzz with these guys. It was just, I mean, the cicadas were also interesting in a number of other ways, too, because you could go and pick the little shells that they leave behind when they molt.
Yeah.
Because the molting is, it's kind of like, it's similar to what crabs go through. It's not like a cocoon process. You know, it's like they leave this outer shell that looks just like them, or looks just like the nymph form.
Yeah, it's like their little sarcophagus.
Yeah. And you can pluck it off the side of the tree. You can sort of stick it on your shirt. You can have it crawl over the head of a G.I. Joe man. You know, all sorts of things. The possibilities
are limitless.
Yeah. Well, that's just one of the many fun things you can do with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like they leave all these grotesque little toys for you to chase your sister with. I always enjoyed that aspect of it. And then, of course, cats and dogs have a big time with the adult version.
Yeah, I saw a photo of a Japanese artist who, and I think that she was maybe a pop singer or something, who had adorned her head with them. And it was actually really cool looking.
The adults or the nymphs?
Just the shell.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was the shell. But it was like a very Bjork move.
Yeah.
Which I admired. It looked pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about shells and you're talking about what we're able to see, it really doesn't represent how many are actually out there. Because within 1 acre, you could have 1.5 million of these
wow.
little things hanging out. Again, and that's why you've got such a loud cry there. And again, you've got the mating sound, which is really important because that call, which is specific to this, to the particular species, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will attract the female. And they're all competing for that female's attention. And I think it's fascinating that each one is different and each one is like, hey, come over here. Hey, ladies. and they'll actually all sing again in chorus, but they'll also fly together. And sometimes it's thought that the reason why they become so loud too is just to scare off would-be predators like birds who might find it so deafening that they don't really want to hang around them.
Yeah, like if you pick one up in your hand, it's going to start doing a lot of, or if a cat starts playing with one, they're going to do a lot of loud buzzing. It's just kind of, hey, stay away from me kind of a deal. But that's the limit really of their defensive capabilities. That and just flying away, of course, which they'll try and do as well.
Yeah. But in a moment after this break, we're going to talk about something called predator satiation, which is this probably one of the coolest sort of like warfare moves you could make as an insect.
All right, here we go.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel, the sponsors of tomorrow, and the Discovery Channel. At Intel, we believe curiosity is the spark which drives innovation. Join us at curiosity.com and explore the answers to life's questions.
And we're back. So again, this concept,
predator satiation, which is more like a defense move. It's not an offense.
It kind of makes me think of the whole, like if somebody, it's kind of like turning the other cheek, you know?
Well, it's kind of, to me, it's like, hey, eat all of my friends here and then don't eat me. Let me just give you a buffet of us.
Yeah.
And then, which will ensure that the other, 900,000 of us live, because there are only a certain amount of predators that are going to eat the cicadas, right?
Right.
And so if you serve up, 100,000 and they all get stuffed, then, hey, they're not really interested in the cicadas anymore.
Yeah, like
it's a brilliant move.
They might as well just go ahead and put out a website with free recipes.
Yeah.
Because they say, like, come on, eat us. We're delicious. You can't possibly eat all of us. There are so many of us. Dude, dig in. We're great. And indeed, I hear they are delicious.
I have heard this. They are supposed to be protein rich. They are supposed to, well, I know they are protein rich. Actually, they're per pound, on par with red meat, actually, in terms of protein. They're supposed to taste like almonds.
Ooh.
And the males, because they have a hollow abdomen, they are reported to taste crunchy like popcorn.
Oh, wow.
And we should talk about the abdomen because it's really important in creating the deafening sound.
Okay.
Yeah. The organs that produce the sound are called timbals, and they're a pair of ribbed membranes at the base of the abdomen. And when they contract, you get the internal timbal muscles causing the timbals to buckle inward, and then it produces a pulse of sound. And then by relaxing these muscles, the timbals pop back to their original position. And then in some cicada species, a pulse of sound is produced as each rib buckles.
Yeah.
How cool is that? I mean, it's basically like your body is an instrument.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I would love to do that.
Well, in a way, like we kind of use our bodies as an instrument, the whole like, sing from your diaphragm kind of thing. I mean, it's we're using a lot of internal space if we're singing properly, right?
Yeah, but if I could pop, a couple ribs and make a cool sound, for my would-be mates to start dancing toward me.
That would be an amazing skill, and it would be I'm picturing just a very kind of slightly grotesque like solo music career. Where you're like doing your music. What's your character name?
Acoustic Girl.
Acoustic Girl. You're doing Acoustic Girl. And then instead of like a drum solo in the middle of it, there's like a rib popping solo. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Right. And I'd be glamoring my audience. I've been watching too much True Blood, of course, with the glamoring reference. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool stuff. That's the really neat thing about these creatures. And again, this happens to be the year of eating cicadas, or at least it seems. There's stuff all over the web of what people have been trying to do in terms of eating cicadas, including a guy in Missouri, and this is from Huffington Post. He's got Sparky's homemade ice cream in Columbia, Missouri, and he sold out the only batch made, by the way, of the insect-filled dessert within hours of its June 1st debut.
Well, on one hand, you can just say, oh, it's the novelty, and ice cream is going through that thing with foodies where let's make every possible version of ice cream possible, every weird flavor that is imaginable. So foodies are going to go nuts for it. It's like, it's made from cicadas. Bring it on. And, you know, even if it doesn't taste all that good. But then maybe it is, you know, it's like oh, cicadas are here. There's something in us. It's like, we should eat these things. They're everywhere and they're high in protein. Like, well, on some level, we recognize that.
Well, it's not unusual in Malaysia or Latin America to have this as street food either.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, oh, yeah, we've talked before about eating bugs. In fact, in the evolution of food, intro podcast that we did recently, they're high in protein. They're out there. We really should be eating more of them. I'm disappointed that you said that we couldn't eat them during this podcast.
Well, I told you I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah, but as a vegetarian, like I say, you're going to eat insects.
No, I told you that's why. I do not drive a motorcycle because I don't want to get any gnats in my
The average person every night, true fact, you'll accidentally consume 6 spiders per night.
Why are you doing
this? If you sleep
in,
it's 12.
To all of us out there who don't want to know that we've been eating bugs.
Okay, that's not a real figure. But but anyway, another interesting thing about these broods, like why the whole let's go disappear for 13, 17 years. It's very much like laying low. It's like the guy who steals a bunch of money from the mob and goes to live on the beach in South America for a decade before he dares sort of become a little more active. The idea is that these guys have enemies, but if your species has a habit of disappearing for nearly 2 decades, it prevents there from being as many specialized cicada killers. I mean, there are some predators out there who specialize in eating cicadas.
Oh yeah, like the wasps, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they haven't, you know, completely dodged it, but
no.
But it keeps there from being an explosion of cicada predators. But incidentally, the way they do that, but it's kind of amusing the way they do that, though, is they end up having this large just glut of cicadas. So everything becomes a cicada predator while the emergence is going on. So
yeah, yeah. But I like that idea of like this witness relocation program to confuse the squirrels.
Yeah.
The squirrels are like, what? 13 years? I didn't think you were going to come out in 13 years. That squirrel is already dead in 13 years.
Yeah. Like, squirrels would not be able to depend on these huge emergences for their survival.
Yeah.
It would just have to be a treat when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. A treat for squirrels, a treat for humans sometimes.
And if you want more information about the different broods, I highly recommend you check out some of these. There's some really cool cicada websites out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Cicada Mania, that's CICADAMANIA.com, is a really good starting point for a lot of this. And they have like these neat charts where they show like the different 17-year broods and, you know, where they are in terms of their emergence. Like I was looking in particular, I think it's brood 11. It's a 17-year brood, and they emerged in 1937 in Connecticut. Then they emerged again in 1954, and they haven't emerged since because they went extinct.
Yeah, and it is sad. Yeah, I saw that on the chart, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And if you want to check out that clip of Sir Richard Attenborough wooing a cicada, you can also go to cicadainvasion.blogspot.com. They've got a couple different clips that are really funny and interesting.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to all this stuff on the blog post that accompanies this episode. So get out there. Listen to some cicadas, eat some cicadas, if you will. And if you have tried any recipes for these or had some of that ice cream, contact us. Let us know how it tastes. We'd love to hear about it. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those. And we'd love to hear from you about any of these topics we've covered. Let us know what other topics you want us to hit. We're all ears.
And if you're like me and you feel like cicadas are sort of like your harbingers of summer doom, signaling the hottest part of the lazy days of summer and angst to follow, you can always send us an email about your thoughts concerning that at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future,
Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.